fasten your seatbelts, and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. It's been 56 years since Dr. Martin Luther King first introduced the world to his dream of a colorblind America. But today, study after study shows Wisconsin still has a long way to go. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Despite decades of efforts to create a more inclusive society, Wisconsin is still repeatedly ranked as the most segregated state in the nation. A Brookings Institute study released in January is one of a string of reports that shows only Washington, D.C. is more segregated than Wisconsin. Joining me today is Chris Norfleet, the co-founder of a local activist group, Power for the People of Love. Chris also played a key role in Toward One Wausau, a public effort to foster inclusivity in the area. We're also joined by Wausau School Board President Tricia Zunker. Tricia is also a Ho-Chunk Associate Justice and has long been an advocate for efforts to reduce segregation and promote a greater understanding of all people in Wisconsin. Chris, Tricia, welcome to Route 51. So, Chris, let's start with you. I know you didn't grow up in Wausau. You grew up in Chicago, yes?
That's true.
Okay. When you joined this community, what did you expect it would be like, and how did that differ from reality?
Oh, good question. When I joined this community, I kind of had no expectations of it because part of life is that a lot of these communities, we tend to be only transient in. So I kind of had no intention on staying here. I found it to be perplexing in a lot of ways because the segregation is running rampant infrastructurally. But yet I found that there was a very large community of people that really want to see change. And I thought that was just kind of odd, but yet it compelled me to want to be here. I feel like there's something here.
So that's, I mean, that made you want to stay?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. You and I had a long conversation a couple of weeks ago about this issue, about segregation, and how there could be some solutions to that.
Right? Absolutely.
And I'd really like to focus on that. Tricia, I know that you're big on finding solutions to problems.
Absolutely.
So what are they? I mean, what can we do?
Well, I mean, part of what this whole discussion is about for me is that our organization is looking to put together a symposium that is engaging more in that aspect of it. Just like any doctor, a patient has to go in and we need to look at what's wrong. But if we only look at what's wrong and never get to the other side and actually get to the healing, we'll never find ourselves in that place of peace. And beyond all things for me as a person, I want to heal. I want every child to be able to not just read MLK's story, but actually live that, and for people to feel empowered to engage in that activity.
Tricia, you're the school board president in Wausau. What is the school board's role in all of this?
Well, to go back to your last question, actually we'll include an answer to that question.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a number of different things that are the road to solution. Not just one single thing is going to get us there. First of all, raising awareness. So things like you're doing, having us on this program and raising awareness of the segregation in central Wisconsin, that's critical. Education, absolutely. Let's educate our students on cultural sensitivity, cultural equity, cultural awareness. Students that would not otherwise be exposed maybe in their home lives definitely need that exposure in school. And third, we need to elect candidates at the local level that support that, that say we need to have a curriculum that embraces diversity. We definitely need to be reaching out to local officials, not just school board, but city council, county board. County board has a committee that's focused on education as one of their aspects. Reaching out to different local officials and saying, what are you doing to help promote a community that embraces all people? And getting answers to that.
Okay, I'll piggyback off of that because one of the most important things to me that we have kind of been sweeping under the road, and that's that landmark case of Brown versus Board of Education, where we as a nation acknowledged that segregation was the empowerment of white communities to the tremendous harm of blacks. And for me, it is beyond important that we no longer ignore that segregation is a illegal act that should be prosecuted. And that is a role that an attorney general should be playing in the protection of our human rights to make sure that this segregation is not being fermented in community after community. I talk about pushing dirt and clearing land. In 1830, black people was here, but yet a community still pushed dirt and cleared land for those who would come from overseas, and I'm okay with that. But yet the African did not take part in that clearing of that land or pushing that dirt, and so therefore our presence is all but non-existent in these communities. However many years later, from 1836 up till now, there's no African representation whatsoever.
I think that some people might be surprised to learn that Wisconsin is the most segregated state because we think that this is just a problem that happens in southern states. Maybe we think it's a problem that only happens in big cities. But here we're in rural America. We're in central and north central Wisconsin, and it continues to be a pervasive problem. I want to run down some of the numbers for you. This is where Wisconsin ranks in the most recent study comparing blacks and whites in Wisconsin. We're 48th in the median income gap. We're 50th in labor force participation, 48th in the unemployment rate gap, 50th in the poverty rate gap, 47th in the high school diploma gap, 45th in the standardized test scores gap, 33rd in the voter turnout gap, and 39th in the infant mortality gap. Does it surprise you?
Some of those are surprising, and we have to do better. It's unacceptable.
Absolutely not surprising. Offensive, dehumanizing, but not surprising at all.
Well, one of the things that I think would be surprising to some people in central Wisconsin is to learn about the segregation, because I think there's a silent majority that does not support any kind of segregation in the community.
Absolutely.
But this population also isn't vocal. And you know the expression privilege is something when you don't think it's a problem because it's not your problem personally. And so people that have that privilege need to step outside of that and say, it might not be my problem, but it's a problem in this community. I don't support the segregation. I don't support the cultural inequity and going outside of comfort zones. Not everybody has to be vocal and come on the radio, but you can make a call to your child's school, to the district, to your local official. You can send an email. So just stepping outside that comfort zone is really critical.
I would totally agree. And I believe this, that we're at a point that where pointing these things out should move us from that place of guilt and becoming defensive to that place of being proactive. At the end of the day, if we don't engage in a level of preparedness on a part of local and county and people in leadership roles, then we still will struggle to have this issue confronted. School has, in my opinion, failed. But that has nothing to do with what they can become equipped to do in the future. It doesn't mean because you fail to enlighten your community about the power, the sheer power of segregation, doesn't mean that you cannot there be that generation that says, we're not going to do that no more. We're going to enlighten our children, our teachers, our administration, so that they will be empowered to play a role in resolving this. We have to engineer this blueprint. It's not going to organically happen. No more did it organically happen that segregation came about.
Well, and one of the things when we talk about schools, we can look at school districts in the state that still retain race-based mascots. I mean, it's unacceptable. And it just stems from somebody grew up in that community and they were that mascot and they don't want to see it changed. Not understanding, hey, please step outside of yourself and see how that affects the Native community. How the psychology of other students that are not Native thinking that, oh, Native Americans are just these stereotypes or caricatures. So when we do talk about schools, we have positive things happening in the Wausau School District with our new superintendent. Certainly we can continue to do better. I think that complacency is never, ever acceptable. But looking outside the Wausau School District, we can look just to the south of us. You know, even the community asked for that mascot to be changed, and it didn't happen.
In Mosinee? Are mm-hmm. you talking about yes. Mosinee? And that was, what, a year ago, 2 years ago?
It was fairly recent,
fairly
yes.
recently, a group of students had gone to the school board and said, hey, we want to have this changed from the Mosinee Indians. And the answer was no.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And to this issue, I totally agree that, look, I grew up in an all-black school in an all-black community and was taught about all white people. And this is the hypocrisy of why you raise all white kids in an all white community and you still teach them too about all white people. And at some point in time, it is important that the black child, the white child, the Hmong child, that we all learn about the presence of the Native American.
Well, and to that point, Chris, achievement is linked to empowerment, right? And empowerment is learning about your own community. So when you're going to school and you're not learning your own history, that is not empowering that population.
Absolutely.
I think it's interesting to note that citizens in Wisconsin describe themselves as being more white than the rest of the country, too. So 86% reported being white in the last census. So some of this is, you know, 90% of students in our schools go to all white schools. So how do you ensure that they're getting that education that they need to understand and realize that when we're talking about the people in our community, we're not talking about other people. We're talking about we as a community. How do you make that happen?
Well, it depends. Are we talking about private schools or public schools? We can't regulate private schools.
Sure.
But public schools have an obligation, for instance, under Act 31, to teach about Native American, the 11 federally recognized tribes in Wisconsin, twice in the elementary level and once in high school. However, DPI doesn't audit. So for compliance, it's on the school boards to say to their superintendent, are we complying with Act 31 to ensure that education is being met? And some school boards might not make that a priority. I can tell you that it is a priority with the Wausau School District to make sure that we're in compliance. And not just because I am a Ho-Chunk woman, but it's my attorney background as well. We have to be in compliance with any and every law.
Sure. We do need to take a break. Chris Norfleet and Tricia Zunker are our guests today on Route 51 as we continue our discussion on segregation in Wisconsin and the role of education in ensuring Wisconsin is open and welcoming. You can join the conversation, too, at 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Chris Norfleet and Tricia Zunker are our guests today discussing segregation in Wisconsin, the state that has repeatedly been ranked the most segregated in America. We'd like to hear from you, too. The number to call is 800-780-9742. Of course, segregation has officially been illegal for decades, but patterns of discrimination in government policy and bank lending practices, as well as people's individual choices to live near others of the same background, those things have all contributed to racial divisions in many parts of the state. Now, advocates say it has led to kind of a de facto segregation in schools. What do you think about that, Tricia?
Well, certainly if certain communities are choosing to live together, then the schools are going to represent that particular community because the individuals will be going to the same school that they reside in that district. So.
Sure. So if we have that, and as we were saying, 90% of these students are in all-white schools, then what's the next step? What's the next step to get that community thinking about we and not other? And what can we do policy-wise? I mean, there's more to it than school policy. There's banking policies, and I mean, there's a lot of government policies that have been pointed to in these studies as problematic that that have led to these issues.
Well, for me, this is where I'm at, right? You've had a diversity commission for 30 years, and I want to know what you've done in that 30 years to increase the presence. You've had one for the school. What have you done to increase the presence in a vibrant, in a positive, in an organized manner so you can have a presence of Black people in 50 years? If you're suggesting to me that you have not yet even been able to acquire something as a low-hanging fruit as a barber salon, a place for women of color to get their hair done, then we need to really take a good look and examine what's going on and start participating in whatever that issue is. Because I believe that there are clearly issues, earmarked issues, personal issues that where people have been allowed to foment this behavior and not have it addressed. So, but it's not just about white people. I do need it to be clear that all community must participate. You cannot sit on the sidelines and expect somebody else to constantly be your voice. If you stand up for the native, you have to speak it and then be prepared to act in their defense. If that's the same thing for the Hmong or the African American, no matter what it is. We have a lot of sideline supporters of all ethnicities.
Yeah, and you know, just to piggyback off what Chris said, there is a really excellent article that was published last October on Indigenous Peoples Day, and it was entitled something along the lines of "Invisibility is the Modern Form of Racism Against Native Americans." But I think we can say that about all minority communities. And it's this idea of, you know, it's one thing when you're being seen as different and treated differently because of that, but now it's like communities aren't being seen at all. So when you point out, we don't have that salon here recognizing, hey, we, you know, here's a place for you to go. It goes to that invisibility, you know, don't even see you here. And it does require what we've been saying all morning. Other people need to step out of their comfort zones and speak up.
Because at the end of the day, that, you know, you're not my enemy. Our history is impeding all of our progress. And if we mechanize our education system to attack just that, part of our problem is that a lot of those who are in power now are probably requiring to be reeducated. For they went through life and never was educated about these issues, and now they're sitting in positions of power. And that whole concept of reeducating the educator is more important than ever, because even a doctor is willing to go back to school to learn new information on his skill. So clearly an educator should embrace that opportunity. Someone who is a policymaker should embrace that issue, that capability to now address something that they weren't able to address before, because we've worked on giving them tools to do just that.
And, you know, none of this really is controversial. It shouldn't be. What is good for a sub-community, when we see improvement for a sub-community, a minority community, that's good for the whole community.
I do want to remind callers, you can weigh in, ask questions. 800-780-9742 is the number to call. You're welcome to call. I read a book released late 2018. It's called Facing Segregation. And I took some notes on some solutions that this book proposes. It was written by a group of 14 scholars. And they came up with these strategies. The strategies included enforcing housing anti-discrimination laws, making housing vouchers more useful by assisting families to locate in higher opportunity areas, interpreting the Community Reinvestment Act to support mixed-income housing in both cities and small communities, promoting scattered site rehabilitation and preservation of affordable housing in high-income neighborhoods through nonprofit-owned affordable housing or community land trusts, and adding inclusionary zoning requirements to development incentives. Finally, the eliminating some local zoning rules that make affordable housing impossible. For instance, rules specifying minimum lot sizes. I mean, are those all viable strategies? Would they work here?
Well, some of those certainly. Those are things that city council can address. Now, I was thinking these are all great ideas, but let's say the one that you were talking about regarding the nonprofit. Where's that coming from? Who's going to be the impetus behind that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, for me, I'm suggesting that until we get over and confront our psychological and our connection that we don't have, white people have all the laws they need right now, here today, to treat every black person, every native person in their community like an equitable citizen. The enforcing of this is a choice. This is where we're at. We have laws protecting our human rights. All citizens have laws protecting their rights here today. What we need to examine is why and what is preventing people from enforcing it.
Well, and it goes back to electing leaders who do want to be in compliance with the law and making sure that you put people that are in positions of power that aren't elected, but, you know, we need people that are in administrative roles. They're not elected, but we also have to make sure we have ethical people in those roles that aren't looking to the side and saying, oh, you know, we're supposed to do this, but we're not. That's not acceptable.
And ethnicity is not, for me, a moral person, a person with a conscience has no, I can't rely on that a person who is going to be black is going to ultimately do the right thing. That means I'm lost and confused if that's how I think. I believe character and integrity is character integrity. I don't care who's performing that act. And this is what we need to have an understanding of, that we need to get to that point that where some of these things we're allowing to happen is because we ourselves are playing into certain dynamics that just don't exist. And so we got to start crushing these things by coming together and not by saying, look, I'm going to just throw this in the air and I just hope something sticks. That's not how anybody designs anything.
I think people need to have these conversations. They need to have difficult conversations. They need to listen, and they need to move forward then. I mean, be part of the solution. Be part of the solution. Would you agree with that?
I got this saying that this whole thing is about getting to the other side. And the day I forget where I'm trying to get with this other side part, I'm going to be in big trouble. Because that's all that's important, is to get to that point where this stuff is no longer a part of our culture and the fabric of our community. And every time we get an opportunity to take a step forward, we got to do it. I can see Trisha's son tapping me on the leg.
He's not really here. sorry, Chris. Just to your point, absolutely, the conversations need to be had, but people need to listen. When a minority community says how they feel, it's not for anybody else to tell them your feelings are invalid. I mean, we had an issue that arose earlier this year, and a video circulated, and it was mocking Native American dancing. And some parts of the community could see that. And, you know, I was vocal as a Ho-Chunk woman. Other members of the Native community, Dylan Prescott, he was interviewed. He's Ho-Chunk in Forest County, Potawatomi. And we described how it felt watching that. And then other members of the community came out and told us we were wrong. to feel that way. So when we have these conversations with minority communities, we have to listen to how they feel and accept that. We don't get to tell others, no, that's wrong. Your feeling is invalid.
100% agree that part of what we're suffering from is a serious level of not having the capability of being empathetic toward another human being. And part of what we have to do is no longer be afraid to expose ourselves to being vulnerable to what the truth is. I like to use analogies, so I'm going to use one. We could put a tourniquet on this, right? We know our civil discourse is bleeding out, but if at no point in time do we take that next step and head for the actual healing, that wound, no matter what you do, is still there, waiting to be opened up again. Our children are watching us. And I don't think we really acknowledge that our children are watching us. Not just watching our bad behavior, but also watching how we struggle mightily to find our common sense, our common love for one another as humanity. They watch us, whether it's about women or men or blacks or whites, gays or straight. They watch us struggle mightily to be vulnerable and to love our fellow man above all. And that's got to be an ultimate goal for a good, moral, righteous nation.
I think it does start at home. I think that's a point that I want to make, that our children do indeed learn from us. I'm certain that my children's views and actions are reflective of the ones they learned at home from watching me.
It does start at home, certainly, but we also have to be cognizant that not every child has a stable home life. But the stability that does occur for those students very often is the school that they go to. So for students that maybe don't have that stability at home, they get that from the school. So it does, this education, it really does track back to, if you're not getting it at home, the school has that duty and that obligation to provide it.
And I've watched teachers.
Oh no, go ahead.
I've watched teachers in this community. There are some, just as Tricia, I find that there are people in this community, in the education system, who have that desire to fill this gap, to educate their community. This is where the empowerment of people using their ability to stand up for these teachers, encouraging these teachers, giving these teachers the economic and social support they need to be more of a model. Patricia Zimke over at John Muir is a awesome example of a teacher going out of her comfort zone and embracing a community of kids who often don't feel like they have a place. She is awesome in that nature. And I'll even say Beth Rosenberg. I mean, she's a person I've met, and she literally make me want to go read, and I can't stand reading.
She does have a love for reading. She's a librarian.
She certainly does. Yes.
Well, she teaches library science, I should say. And just to go back to the teachers, so just to clarify, the WASA School Board is a policy governance board. So we can have a policy, certainly, and do that embraces and encourages teaching of, you know, cultural teachings, and but it's broad. So when I talk about putting people in other powerful positions, that's talking about the principals. That's talking – the principals direct the tone of the school, and we put immense trust in them to run that school. Mm-hmm. But it can vary in how much, because they do have a degree of flexibility in what they want, how much they want to promote certain minority cultural education, if you will. And that goes back to our superintendent, because he's the one that puts those principals in the schools. And then it relates back to the board, because our only check is on our superintendent, not the principals.
And this is me, right? A lot of people, you know, I the one thing I need to try to let y'all know that we need to break up the cycle of this community is all these friendships. your close relations to each other often don't allow you to have checks and balances and be objective when other people are saying what your friends are doing. I mean, I like the concept that Trisha is saying, but for me, we have to get to the point of where we talk about why you don't hire black people for principals, why you don't have a black policeman, why you don't have a black city councilman ever, county board member ever. I mean, if we don't look at that fact that you've never had this, and this community has for your whole history have been as white as a snow-capped mountain. And for us to not point this out just seems to be part of what we are struggling with. So when we have people like Trisha and like people in the community who really want to make that change, I think that onus is on us all as citizens to not ply anger at that point, but to ply our ability to be a part of the solution. Now, sometimes you got to take a stand with people who are dragging their feet. But the reality is you must keep your eye on the prize. And the goal is authentic change. And until we get to some truth about how we feel, we will never build trust.
And that's so true. Attracting diverse candidates has to be a priority. It benefits the entire classroom. If we're talking about a teacher of color, for instance, or a teacher from a maybe typically not recognized population, it's good for the entire class, right? For the students, the minority students that have a teacher to identify with, but it's also an opportunity for the majority population of students to be able to interact with somebody from a different culture in that capacity, learn from somebody from a different culture. So it absolutely has to be a priority, and I'm glad that you pointed that out.
The one thing I do want to say to that is that this is where the leadership have got to act, because part of a child's learning is having the capability to go to places like museums, to go to places like cultural centers where they can be engulfed for a day, two, three times a year in another people's culture that have existed in their community. If the school wanted to take their child somewhere right now to specifically talk about the American of African descent or the Native of American descent, where do you take them here?
So
that's a good question. And we do need to take a break. Chris Norfleet and Trisha Zunker, our guests today on Route 51. We're going to continue this discussion on segregation. What can be done to ensure Wisconsin is a more welcoming place for all people? You can join the conversation, too. We encourage you to call 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Chris Norfleet and Trisha Zunker, our guests today, discussing segregation in Wisconsin, and we'd like to hear from you, too. The number to call, 800-780-9742, if you'd like to weigh in or ask a question of our guests. So in a perfect world, right, we'd be living Dr. King's dream of a colorblind society, right?
Well, for me, not really.
No?
No, because that's not perfect.
Okay.
You know, in a perfect world for me, my children would be just fine with allowing a Native person to be their role model. In a perfect world, a white kid will be just fine with having a black person as a role model. Because our ethnicity is important. Our culture is important. It doesn't decide whether you're going to be a good or bad person. But those experiences connect with kids in ways that we can as adults. And we got to let them see what they want to see. So a perfect world would be we embody our ethnicity and we treat it with the love and freedom it deserves.
I think that's very important and totally correct, Chris. I mean, it's important to see the differences and embrace them and learn from them. It makes us all better people.
That's interesting. I mean, and I think that's an interesting point, that you don't want everybody to be the same, but to continue to celebrate who we are individually.
Yeah, I think we often confuse equality with equitable treatment. Equitable treatment has nothing to do with whether or not we can treat each other's culture with a certain level of dignity. You know, for my children to not have a stable and equitable understanding of the Native people is unhealthy for him or them if they're in this society where Native people exist, right? Because then my son will have that level of misunderstanding through whatever you get around coffee tables, whatever you hear in the back of cabs. The negative, and I've been a garbage man. I'm going to be straight with you. I've been a garbage man, and I heard some very deplorable things from people. You know, I worked out in Chippewa Falls, Black River Falls, and these men had no respect for the people out there. And that's disgusting. I mean, for me, because these people have been on this land longer than anybody. So how do not everybody understand where they've been?
Looking back at that Brookings Institute study that ranked Wisconsin the most segregated state, and by the way, that report just came out in January. It is a newer report, but pretty much a carbon copy of reports that have come out for years. They rank Wisconsin 46th among states that have made the most racial progress. That seems to be a poor indication that any change is on the horizon.
Well, change is on the horizon based on whether or not we're going to shine.
Absolutely. There's just immense complacency in society. If people are not taking action. And it can't just be on a couple vocal members of a community that are, you know, I feel like I'm always being questioned about things. And there's many other Native Americans in the community. But I guess maybe I just feel it's more incumbent on me to be vocal. Ho-Chunk, we are the people of the big voice. That's what Ho-Chunk means. But others need to step up. And I'm not saying just in the Native community. It's just this theme that we're hearing now all morning about other people from the majority community, from other communities, need to step up as allies. Otherwise, we are going to stay complacent, and that means no progress.
Complacency is a terrible, terrible, terrible problem. And I do agree with this, that we cannot afford to just allow five people to do all the work for a whole community. But we also need to make it aware to the white community why a lot of people of color don't come out. Because you engage in recognizance instead of connection. You want to know what we're doing, but you don't want to know who we are.
I'm sorry. That's a great point, Chris. And also, people that in the past have been vocal and say, nothing happened. There was no change. So why even bother? It does take an emotional toll. It does feel lonely standing there kind of being alone, even though you're not alone. It feels lonely. So I think that's another important point to point out is when change isn't happening, people stop being vocal.
And that's that measure that PFPL want to be about. That's that measure that PFPL want to be about. And that is to secure an outcome. Unless I really believe that white people cannot change, you know, if I really believe that, then I need to get off this mic and go home. But I believe that any human being can change their ways. If they're enlightened and they have the right empowerment and the right community support, yes, change can come about. And so therefore we need to see it and look at it from that lens. But there needs to be an outcome. Part of this community needs to understand that based on Jim Crow and a lot of the policies that exist now, you've created so many hurdles for the average black person or Native person to want to engage and be a part of this system. We worry more about the negative that's going to come out of us speaking truth than the positive. And that view has got to change. And that's not going to just take the work of black and brown people. That's also going to take the work of the white American to say, we are no longer going to subject you to all the backlash from telling us the very things that we journal ourselves, and then when you say, look what you got on paper, you go into the most ridiculous forms of denial I've ever seen.
There's also a question of just prioritizing. There's people that will recognize, oh, that's an important issue. Maybe integrating a certain class as an elective in a high school. But then maybe the decision's made, it's not going to have enrollment, and then it's going to impact this, or it's not going to have high enough enrollment, it's going to impact enrollment in this, then we're going to have to cancel that section. Well, there's got to be creative ways to make things work, to say, this is a priority, even though all these other things are important too, this is also important. And so bringing in creativity is critical as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I do believe as long as this community maintains its whiteness, as white as it is, it'll be hard for them to find good reasons to talk about these subjects that we run away so hard from. I believe if you did have more black people, it would, of course, require the need. If you had more Native people, it would require a greater need for this type of conversation. I would love for our kids to be able to learn Native American language. Why don't we? We know German. We know French. But we don't know not one of our own people's language. We don't even know how many Native tribes there are. The average American.
Yeah, that's a great point. A lot of people think there's just Navajo and Cherokee.
And Indians.
Right.
It's generalized.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Same way with the blacks. Africa is a huge continent. True. We cannot specifically tell you any languages or any real connection to our people.
I think people would be surprised to know that there are currently 578 federally recognized tribes in the United States.
I was shocked.
And there are tribes that are fighting for federal recognition, which is such it's crazy.
Still today?
Absolutely. They are fighting for federal recognition. So they exist as people, but the government says, oh, you have to go through this exhaustive process to be recognized as a tribe.
That's baffling.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
When Trisha said that at the county board meeting about how many tribes it was, I was embarrassed a little. I was happy to hear it, but I was embarrassed. Because in my lifetime, we've never been educated about the importance of regional tribes for the Native people and the different cultures that each tribe can often embody.
Yeah, there are 11 federally recognized tribes in Wisconsin. And then going back to the federal recognition, there's also the Brotherton Band of Indians in Wisconsin. They are not federally recognized yet.
So I know that there are efforts underway to increase education about Native Americans in Wisconsin. How successful has that been so far?
Well, DPI reported last year on Indigenous Peoples Day that most districts are not in compliance with Act 31. So that, just to go back, that is the law that requires education twice at the elementary level, once at the high school level, in all Wisconsin public districts, public school districts. But also, it's on the local district to ensure compliance. And so statewide, it's not great. Locally, it is a priority in the Wausau School District. I can say that.
I'm curious what it's like in the other districts within our listening area. In the Northwoods, I don't know. But is this type of thing something that could work if it was better regulated, if it was better controlled? Is that kind of initiative something that could work to help students at a young age understand more about people of color in their classrooms and in their communities?
Well, not for me personally, until we start addressing the behavior of adults, we're going to struggle with kids taking heed to a lot of the information that even the most vigilant teacher might be trying to teach them. We have that issue of how do you go about re-educating a nation of people who are now grown who have such deep-seated behavior, but yet we can't just let that go. We just can't say, well, there we can only focus on the young now. Even though these grown-ups are in positions of power and making decisions, so we have to be prepared to look at our own adulthood and say we have to be willing to go into this and look to be re-educated and re-enlightened about a lot of these things that we've overlooked.
And I do think certainly more regulation would lead to a positive impact in the classroom, but I am not advocating for more regulation. I say this is on the citizens to elect people to local positions, to elect people to the school board that say, hey, we want to be in compliance, not just with Act 31, but with all of our laws, and then make that a priority in working with the superintendent of that district. And with when communities do that, when voters do that, then we'll have that positive effect in the classroom.
And no matter what, let's not forget, school is not the only institution that has some bearing up to do. They got to do their thing, yes, but every institution has to get involved and participate. It cannot be only one institution that is held accountable for the evolution of this process. I think we all got to participate, but all these institutions, from the city council to the county board, we all got to engage this and become more proactive and show that we're prepared to be that better citizen than history reflects.
Yeah, and you know, I'll just say personally, I was disappointed to see that this new committee proposed by Mayor Mielke, that City Council opted to remove diversity from the title. I thought, you know, that to me was hurtful. We don't recognize diversity as important. We take it out of the title of this new committee.
Because the fact of the matter is that it is angled at, if you will, talking about bringing more color to your community, brightening it up. How do you perceive that? I mean, if a community cannot openly say, hey, look, we need to support the presence of people that don't look like us, period. And why aren't they here? Why don't they support it? Why don't they engage? We need to have that conversation. And one of the most important things that I struggle with is that we got to get away from people having that real arrogant posture of, I'm going to go around and start appointing people that appeal to my sense of progress, which is often none at all.
Then is the answer opening the application process up to everyone, that it's not just appointed, that it's open to
absolutely
all?
Absolutely. I believe all community members under these circumstances where you're trying to get communities that have historically not engaged to engage, you have to give everybody the opportunity to participate. Make it available to us all. And if that person is not capable, well, then that's how life is. Not every cook is a good cook. Right? So, but that cook is able to go apply for that job or participate. So when we don't allow everybody to say that their view can be heard, because not every two Native people think alike, not every two Black people think alike, and we got to look at how they think more than what the color of their skin is, because that's what character is about.
How do you encourage more people to get involved? How do you get them to engage?
PFPL is going to encourage you guys to get involved with this symposium, because I believe somebody, whether Tricia and I, myself, want to have to push this issue forward, but I believe if she stepped away, or I step away, or some the 10 people step away, who fills that void? And do we just say, well, we made that void available and nobody feels it? See, that's not going to benefit our kids. So therefore, until others are able, comfortable, whatever the hurdle is, we got a job to do. We got a role to play in this community. And whether it's good or bad for us as individuals at times, I believe as long as we are committed and show some level of conviction, in the end, at the end of the day, we will either help the process to get to the other side or, you know, I mean, I'm not afraid to believe the impossible is possible, that we can get to the other side as we sit here.
Well, and what's critical is awareness and prioritizing. Those are the two comments I'll say. It's just being aware of the others in the community and prioritizing a desire within yourself to say, I want to learn more.
That's all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. I'd like to thank our guests, Tricia Zunker and Chris Norfleet. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Our on-air producer today is Joy Ratch-Kramer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route 51. Next week, we'll welcome State Senator Pat Testin and State Representative Scott Krug for a discussion on nitrates in Wisconsin wells and what they're proposing to mitigate the risk. Until then, we're heading out of town.